Today, my guest is Nick Landry. Nick, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Good to see you again.
Good to see you. You are a technical evangelist, are you not?
Yes, so am I. Just like you.
Yeah, we both are, exactly.
Technical evangelist.
How's that going?
It's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a great job.
We were talking earlier about universal apps, which are evolving.
Yep. So for those that don't know, universal apps is basically the term that we use to describe an app that you build that will run on all of our Windows SKUs. So it can be a little confusing for some mm-hmm. people, because I know Apple uses the same thing for their apps that run on iPhone and iPad. Mm-hmm. But ours are more universal, because we basically run the same app on the phone. So it could be like phone,
yep.
tablets, phablets, hybrids, two-in-ones, convertibles, Ultrabooks,
desktops.
Notebook, desktop, laptop. Technically, even server. Not that I would put them on a server, but
yeah, yeah. And that's a big deal, because it used to be that we had to write one app for our phone and
yep.
a different app for our desktop. And even Apple had the same thing. To be fair, they had basically one app that got deployed to the iPhone, iPad, and a different app that had to be deployed to the MacBook,
right,
or the desktop. What do they call the Mac
OS X?
Yeah,
basically Mac OS X. Yeah, we're basically on the convergence path.
And we just drew we used to draw the line at a different spot between
right.
the phone and the tablet, and the tablet joined to the PC.
Yeah,
but
so
now
we're
bringing them all together.
It's everything. It's not just the tablet and the PC. It's IoT with small devices.
We're
like
removing
the Raspberry
that line
Pi.
Entirely.
Yeah, it's going to include Xbox as well. So
Xbox
we've basically
too.
Been
yeah.
on this convergence path. It started with Windows 7 and Windows Phone 7. Mm-hmm. We were sharing a little bit then. Like IE9 was on
right.
both, and there was some XAML on both sides. But they're all different flavors of XAML.
Yep.
And with Windows Phone 8, we moved to the Windows 8 Core under Windows Phone 8. But Windows Phone 8 was still .NET Silverlight model you were mm-hmm. using for the phone, and then you were using WinRT for the actual app.
And the point is that those are not binary compatible.
No, they're not.
So you couldn't write a class library. It wasn't easy to write a class library and have them call
you could them. You could create like a PCL, but your
portable
PCL would...
Portable class library.
A portable class library. That's something we introduced in VS 2012, if I remember correctly. And the thing with the PCL is it lets you target multiple versions of .NET.
Right.
But the problem is the surface area that was common between .NET 4.5 or Windows Phone Silverlight and WinRT. Mm. WinRT is not .NET. There's a .NET profile for WinRT, but it's WinRT. It's a new API.
Mm.
So you could share maybe 30-40% of your code tops
okay.
between those two platforms.
Unless
so that was kind of harder.
The Xbox.
Yeah, and Xbox was a whole other thing.
Yeah.
Now with 8.1, the story got a lot better, because Windows Phone is now 8.1 full WinRT, Windows full WinRT. So we introduced these shared projects. So you could use shared projects or PCL or both, really.
What's the difference between a shared project and a PCL? They look pretty similar to the
Yeah, so
the
shared projects glance. Shared projects were pretty interesting. And I say were because we actually have a new model now.
Okay.
If somebody wants to use a shared projects, they'll still be able to. But shared projects basically allowed you to share code between two projects. So mm-hmm. when you create a universal app project for Windows Phone 8.1 or Windows 8.1, you would basically get three projects in there. You would get a Windows Phone project, you would get a Windows Store project, and you would get a shared project. A shared project is kind of like file linking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like let's say there's a class in another project you've built before, it's like a helper class, and you say, I could use that helper class in that project right now. Let me go and add it to my project. What Visual Studio truly does is it takes a copy of that class, copies it over to your project, and adds it to your project in Visual Studio. But what a lot of people have noticed is that in Visual Studio, for the longest time, there was also an option on that Add button where you could click a little arrow, and it was called Add as Link. So it would leave the class file where it was,
mm-hmm.
and it was basically linking it in your project. So technically now you had two different solutions or projects that use the same source file.
I see.
So if you edited in one, you could reopen in the other. You'd have to rebuild, of course. But it allows you to share code more easily across different projects. So shared projects is file linking done better.
Okay.
It basically, all it means is that whenever you do your Windows Phone build, it takes all the files in the Windows Phone project plus all the files in the shared projects, and it creates the Windows Phone build target.
Okay.
Same thing with Windows Store. It takes all the files in the Windows Store project, all the files in the window in a shared project, creates one build out of it.
Mm.
That's nice. That was good. We were able to achieve sometimes 90, even 95% shared code, depending on the nature of your code, of course, and how specific you were to the platform. But in the end, it was still creating two binaries.
Yes.
Now, Windows 10, it's the ultimate convergence. Now we're finally arrived where you can write one single project. So when you create, you go to install the it's all available today, by the way.
Okay.
You can go enroll into the Windows Insider program. I assume you can give links.
Yep.
With your blog, so in your videos. So
There'll be a link appearing right here.
There you go. It's like all dynamic. See, right here. So I'm just giving Dave extra work here.
It's approximately right.
So you can enroll into the Windows 10 Insider program to get the latest builds of Windows 10. You can then get the Windows 10 SDK, basically the tools for developers. And there's also all videos you can watch, like our colleagues Jerry Nixon and Andy Wigley in the UK basically recorded a whole MVA full-day course you can watch to learn how it works. But the gist of it is that now when you create a new UAP project, which is the Universal App Platform, so what you're technically building is the Windows 10 Universal App Platform. And when you create a new UAP project, you get one project in your solution only. Mm. It's not a Windows phone and a Windows store. It's one project.
So when I
only
compile it, I get one executable.
You get one binary only.
And that'll run on a phone. It'll run on a desktop and run on a tablet.
Yeah, you'll be able to take that. So the way it works is that we have a core, basically. Mm-hmm. So we have a Windows core. That's part of a UAP core that gives you all of the common pieces across all of those platforms.
Okay.
But of course, there's stuff that's specific to phones sometimes.
Sure.
And there is, for example, we have, trying to think of,
like, accelerometer, for
the
example.
Camera, there could be accelerometer, regular computers might not have them, yep. Tablets do, but regular computers don't. On Xbox, you have things like avatars, Xbox Live, and everything. So each platform can have some specific APIs that you can target. Mm. So the way it works is you have the core, and then you've got these optional API surfaces you can target. Mm. But when you build your app, let's say that you just stick to the essentials. You can then take that binary, you can put it on a phone, you can put it on a small tablet, you can put it on a Surface, on the laptop, on the desktop, on an Xbox, or even on a Raspberry Pi when we have Windows 10 for IoT that's released soon enough.
Hmm.
So it's Universal App Platform, you can run it everywhere without having to create a new build. It's the same binary. Now, if you want to target something specific to the platform, because it's going to happen, it could be either because it's a behavior that's going to be different on the platform because the experience on a phone is not the same.
Yeah, maybe you want to click the button that says phone call.
Yeah,
most PCs don't have a phone.
Exactly.
Most phones do.
So in that case, what you're going to do is you have the ability to target specific APIs in the platform. But the way it works is with shared projects before, we're using those poundifs or hashifs, you know, hash sign, if. But poundifs are basically conditional compilation. So whenever you would compile, the compiler would run through and say, well, when I'm building this target, if you want me to include this code, if Windows Phone, then I'll include it because I'm doing the Windows Phone build. And then it would include it in your build, and you're done. But when you would build a Windows Store build, it would go, oh, it's if Windows Phone, so I don't include that. So that piece of code would not go in the Windows Store binary. Or it could be an if and then an else if, where you have some code for Windows Phone, some code for Windows Store.
Yep.
The nature of things with poundifs is that you do require multiple binaries.
Right.
People don't want multiple binaries. They want one simple solution that works across the board. So the way it works now with the Windows 10 Universal App Platform is you can basically go check for the presence of certain APIs. So there's, I'm going to spare you the syntax because Jerry and Andy cover that very well in their MVA video, so they can go watch
but
all
it definitely
of that.
Starts with if.
Yeah, but it's not conditional compilation. It's an if, but it's not a poundif.
Got it.
So it's an if that type is present, or sometimes it can be if that contract is present. Because basically, the APIs, I said API surface, but they're API contracts. So you have an API contract for the phone, an API contract for Xbox, and there's also the base API contract for the Windows core, basically.
Okay.
Because in the end, you target the UAP. You don't target Windows.
Mm.
So you're kind of independent of the version of Windows you have underneath. So for anybody who's watching this, if they've ever done, for example, Android development, it's kind of similar to what Android has been doing. Mm. They have their operating system versions for Android, but they also have their API levels. So for example, if I remember correctly, I think that Jelly Bean 4.1, Android 4.1 Jelly Bean was API 16, I think.
Okay, Jelly Bean
like
is an Android operating system.
Yeah, well, it's a version of Android. They started naming all their operating systems after candy and desserts and stuff.
Okay.
And then 4.2 was API 17, and 4.3 was 18, and then 4.4, which was KitKat, was 19, if I remember correctly. And then I think at 5, they moved to 20. 5.1 is 21. Or maybe I'm off by a number, so please don't write in.
Right.
But all
I know is I'm getting hungry.
Yeah. So when you would talk to an Android developer, they don't say, I'm targeting Android 4.2 or I'm targeting this API. I'm basically targeting API 21. My app requires, at minimum, I don't know, API 19, but I'm actually targeting 21, for example. It could be something like that. So it's the same thing now. In your manifest files, you will basically say, what is the minimum version of the UAP that you need, and what is the ideal UAP version that you target? Because remember, you can go check for the existence of certain contracts. So this way, even if you can run on a minimum base, you can light up some functionality in your code by checking for the existence of certain features in the API contracts. So this way...
Is that what's done by feature detection? Kind of like JavaScript... implementing HTML5 features in JavaScript, we check for feature detections rather than operating systems or browsers.
So, I'm not a big JavaScript expert, so I can't really comment on that.
In this
context, I know some people have compared it a little bit to kind of like what Modernizer does.
Yeah, that's what Modernizer does. So I'll just give the short version of that. It's the bad way in JavaScript to say if IE version 9,
that's bad.
Then do this. Yep. Else if Chrome, do that. A better way is say I want to use the the canvas tag or the audio tag.
Right.
And I would say if modernizer.audio, I'd check whether or not, I don't care what browser it is, does it support audio?
Yep, exactly.
And if so, then I'll use it.
So this is what you're doing here. You can check for specific types. You can check for a whole API contract if you want. And then if it's there, you can use it. And then the Universal App Platform and the underlying Windows underneath will basically will tell you if it's there or not. And then your code can adapt itself accordingly. So it's pretty cool because developers are going to make it very simple to actually build something and then run it across a whole set of devices. And this way, they're not going to have to write multiple builds and deploy multiple versions. And with one binary comes only one store.
Okay.
That's the other cool thing, because we'll have one store which is the same one for phones, for Xbox, for Windows Store as well on desktops and laptops and tablets. So for developers, it's an amazing opportunity because you publish to one, whether it's an app or a game, everybody will see it. Today, Xbox is still a heavily curated experience, but soon enough, that's going to be opened up so that developers can just publish apps and games over there.
So I'm excited for the future, but it's not here yet. What advice do we have for developers that are developing right now on what's available today?
So the key is that for a more simplified experience, so if you need to target application, basically devices that are existing right now and you want to put stuff in production right now, in a way, if you have individual projects that target Windows Store or Windows Phone, it's going to be an easier transition for you. Mm. Because if you target the universal apps today with the two projects plus the shared project, the migration is going to be a little trickier because you'll have to basically merge three projects back into one.
Okay.
Today, with the tools that we have, it's all explained in the MVA. You kind of have to do a little bit of package app manifest, like gymnastics, to edit some stuff and everything. So, but the bottom line is, it's not too critical. It's not too hard.
Okay.
I would say if people want to build today, still build universal apps. Okay. Definitely that the WinRT model, XAML, C#, which is basically the primary platform for which to build your apps. Keep building those. This is great. If you know that you're going to target probably an app that's going to launch maybe later this year, or you have a bit more of a long-term strategy, you can get started today on Windows 10. Hmm. Or at the very least, if you're building on Windows 8.1 today, you can take a look at Windows 10 and get ready for it. Because the cool thing is, the tools are ready, so you download Visual Studio 2015. Hmm. We're at CTP 6 as of this recording. And then you install the preview tools for Windows 10 for developers.
Uh-huh.
And then after that, you can basically start building apps today. So everybody can actually go get that right now.
Are you blogging about this right now?
I will.
Okay, well, tell me your blog so we can check it out.
So, you can check my blog. It's ageofmobility.com. You can go look for it. I've got a lot of source code as well. So, for example, last month I recorded an MVA, a Microsoft Virtual Academy, for those that don't know.
Yep.
It's our training site with free training. Yep. I recorded an MVA with our colleague Jeremy Foster. And it was all about what we talked about in the last topic on technology and friends, which was...
Cortana,
building apps with speech, speech recognition, text-to-speech, Cortana, voice commands. So I've got a lot of code in my GitHub as well about all of this. So, and I'm going to be blogging soon a lot more on the speech side in the integration with Windows 10. Because that's another place where we have full convergence. On the phone, we could do text-to-speech, speech recognition, and voice commands. Mm. But on the Windows Store, we could only do text-to-speech.
Until Cortana now, came to the Windows Store.
Yeah, because now we have Cortana is on the desktop and on tablets and on Surface with Windows 10. And the full API set of Cortana and the integration with voice commands is now not just on a phone, it's also on desktop. So you can write universal apps fully speech enabled, and that I will be blogging about a lot in April.
Nick, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Say technology inference.
Just technology inference? Okay. Do I look at the camera?
Yeah,
okay. Technology and friends.